Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 1, Yuki O'Malley and the Belfair, a tale of Victorian horror, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Chapter 10, The Fleeting Furlough of Mrs. Flack. Mrs. Flack cheerfully led Yuki out the front door of Coyle House. The enthusiasm which seemed to radiate off of Mrs. Flack was noticeably absent in Yuki. A grim expression spread across her face and a backpack slung over her shoulder. The small bag she had been instructed to pack with some extra clothes. Yuki was having a little difficulty generating the expected eagerness for a full day of sightseeing and fun. Yuki's mind was miles away. She had been trying, without success, to remember specifics about the waking dream she had experienced earlier. But as she poked at her memory, nothing seemed to stir. The vision of Coyle House in the past had long faded. Now, all Yuki could think about was how to manage getting some time on her own for a bit of exploring, to get past the double doors that led to the north wing. Surely, something of her grandmother's would jog her memory, or maybe even trigger another vision. But all that would have to wait. Yuki was also wondering about Tina. The house had been distinctly free of cold drafts and mayhem since Tina had been vanquished by Derwinter, resulting in her apparent death again. Yuki recalled Crowley mentioning something about summoning. She thought that sounded promising. It'd just be a matter of finding a private moment to call him, which, at present, seemed very unlikely. Mrs. Flack walked through the untamed garden and down to the stairs to the street below. She pointed out her car, and Yuki had to do a double take. Parked in the bright sunlight was Pinky, Mrs. Flack's 1956 Metropolitan convertible. The car's two-tone pink and white paint job, not to mention its rather diminutive proportion, gave it the impression of a toy car that had escaped from the circus. Yuki was bewildered. Pinky was the most unlikely car for the always-in-black Mrs. Flack. But then again, based on Mrs. Flack's current outfit, which blazed bright green in the summer sun, maybe her assessment had been hasty. Yuki opened the car's tiny door and slid into the front seat. Pinky was so small that there was barely a bench for the two of them to share. Mrs. Flack got in behind the wheel, closed her door, and turned the ignition. Pinky came to life, and the vintage AM radio lilted out the equally vintage soundtrack which seemed to follow Mrs. Flack everywhere she went. They pulled away from the curb and made a tiny U-turn. Mrs. Flack hit the gas, and Pinky shot up Taylor Street. As they approached the top of the hill, where Mrs. Flack happened to be pointing out a patch of green called Poet's Corner, a small figure suddenly darted out into the street.
Watch out!
Mrs. Flack shrieked and slammed on the brakes, bringing Pinky to a screeching halt. The figure of a young girl with a dirty face and matted hair popped up from in front of the car. Luckily, she appeared to be unharmed. The girl pounded on Pinky's hood a few times, leaving little muddy handprints. Then she bolted across the street, where she crouched, wild-eyed, and hid between two parked cars. She clutched at the dirty yellow jacket she was wearing, then disappeared into the bushes.
What was that? Honestly, dirty children just running loose? You have to be so careful driving in the city these days. There ought to be a law. Ugh, I just had the car washed.
Mrs. Flack turned up Pinky's radio and was immediately subdued as the lilting melody resumed. As Pinky disappeared over the hill towards Fisherman's Wharf, two SFPD squad cars and a colossal gold Cadillac approached from the opposite direction. They slowed, turned, and stopped in front of the Belfair's driveway. Mr. Derwinter moved aside the mangled pieces of the fallen chandelier and made his way behind the reception counter, where, thanks to the sturdy 80s construction, everything had remained intact. The row of monitors and blinking switches seemed to have survived the impact of the plummeting chandelier. Derwinter looked down at the glowing monitor, which showed the three uniformed police officers standing casually behind a thin and slightly shabby-looking man, someone Derwinter thought he'd never see again. The frizzy hair, the dirty horn-rimmed glasses, he hadn't changed a bit. Audra Lamalle bolted up the stairs, her luggage flying behind her as she made a beeline for her ballroom.
I'll be down directly. Just keeps him entertained while I freshen up a bit.
Derventer took a deep, calming breath and pressed a switch.
Yes? May I help you?
On the monitor, the thin man looked awkwardly up at the camera, then turned and spoke into the call box.
This is, Detective Golden and the SFPD. We'd like to ask you some questions pertaining to a recent disappearance. I have a search warrant.
Derventer released the switch, cutting off Detective Golden's voice. He paused a moment to collect himself.
Recent disappearance?
He arched an eyebrow, wondering what that could possibly have to do with him, when suddenly, Philgrave came to mind.
The crazy old conjurer has been acting somewhat erratic lately, and just when I dared to think that things were beginning to look a tad optimistic.
He glanced up the stairs towards the ballroom, took another deep breath, and pressed the switch again.
Yes, of course. Always happy to oblige the police. Do come right in.
The monitor showed the black iron gate swinging inward. Detective Golden disappeared down the tunnel while the officers hesitated. They looked back towards their squad cars almost lovingly, but then relented and followed Detective Golden through the gate on foot. Detective Golden entered the Belfair through the sliding glass doors and was immediately struck by the disarray. His eyes scanned about, mostly out of habit, as if he was at a crime scene. The uniformed officers entered uneasily behind him, unsnapping the holsters of their firearms. Detective Golden observed the broken chandelier bent over the reception desk.
Been doing some redecorating, I see. Or maybe you've got a poltergeist.
His smirk faded as he looked closer at one of the twisted arms of the chandelier that extended out. He pushed his glasses up the bridge of his nose. One of the antique light bulbs had survived the fall. He gaped at the tiny printing on the bulb's base. Golden Electrics.
These antiques can be so unpredictable. Luckily, no one was injured.
Derventer had walked around the counter from the opposite direction, as if to block the detective from the mirrored corridor and his studio.
Now then, I suppose I should be all formal and ask to see this supposed search warrant.
Detective Golden showed no reaction to Deventer's slightly mocking tone. He simply reached into the inner pocket of his blazer and produced a folded sheet of paper.
Yes, I wanted to be sure our little visit here today was official.
The uniformed officers fanned out behind Detective Golden, their eyes searching and scanning the corners of the room. Golden watched Derventer's face intently.
It has been quite a while since I was here last.
Derventer met and matched Detective Golden's gaze.
Nearly 13 years now, I believe. Yes. The O'Malley business. Such a tragedy.
Detective Golden cocked his head to the side and peered at Derventer.
Yes, the O'Malley business. I understand that Ame and her daughter have recently moved back.
At that, Derventer seemed mildly surprised.
Oh? From where, I wonder, might you understand such a thing? Anyway, yes, they're settling in rather nicely, thank you. We're all one big happy family.
Yes, I'm sure.
Derventer bristled.
So, Detective Golden, was there something you wanted?
Yes. Are you familiar with a Miss Daisy Von Bruin?
Yes, of course. One of the twins.
Yes, that's right. Are you aware that she's been reported as a missing person, and that her last reported location was on the sidewalk directly outside this building?
Reported? Who reported?
That would be her sister, Rosie Von Bruin, who was verified to have been walking with Daisy at that time.
The detective flipped open a small notebook and began to read.
When something reached up through the broken sidewalk and snatched her.
A smug expression spread across Detective Golden's face.
I don't know what you're up to this time, but abducting someone so well known in the community? You're getting sloppy, Derventer.
The officers behind Golden shot quiet glances at each other. Derventer's face became as cold as marble.
Now, Detective. If I'm not much mistaken, that sounds like an accusation dreamt up by some senile old busybody who has nothing better to do. I suggest you produce some proof to support this charge, or I can promise you, my attorneys will eat you alive.
Detective Golden seemed calm as he prepared to deliver his response. But before he could speak, the ballroom door slammed overhead, echoing through the great room. The sound of high heels clacking down the stairs announced the arrival of Audra Lamalle.
Now, what's all this talk of lawyers? Surely we can work out this little difficulty like rational people.
She stood framed under the archway above, her silver decanter in hand. Madame Lamalle was now quite refreshed and dressed in a flowing black silk robe, both eyebrows angled menacingly symmetrical under a new arrangement of fiery copper curls. She poured herself a cocktail into an enormous martini glass as she descended the stairs. She sipped the acid-green liqueur, her golden eyes burning over the rim of the glass. Devinter glanced up the stairs with a sigh of relief.
Ah, my dear. Your timing is impeccable.
Lamalle winked at Devinter and turned her gaze upon the uniformed officers.
The boys in blue. How delicious.
Her golden eyes bore into them, and the officer's posture seemed to slacken.
All this pointless interrogation must be exhausting. Please, darlings, make yourselves comfortable.
While Detective Golden flinched at his investigation being labeled pointless, he suddenly looked around himself, realizing he had been deserted. Detective Golden frowned at the dopey smiles that spread across the faces of the officers, which were now lounging contentedly with their feet up. Golden turned back to Devinter with a slightly panicked expression, and Devinter's cold gray eyes flashed.
I don't recall if you two have ever met. Of course, it won't matter once she's finished with you.
Golden's face twitched, then he spun around with a start, realizing that Audra Lamalle had crept up silently behind him. His eyes were drawn instantly to hers. The golden fire that burned in those strange eyes enfolded him, and in their beguiling embrace, Detective Golden found himself completely at ease. His worries had evaporated. Everything was perfectly fine. Detective Golden's mouth slackened and his glasses slid down the bridge of his nose. He looked back again at Devinter with a childlike grin and laughed.
You! You're a bad man. Yep, I'm here to run you in.
Devinter snickered and glanced at Lamont.
Good lord, Audra, what have you done? You've reduced him to a perfect imbecile.
Lamalle took a large sip of her drink and lightly slapped the side of Golden's face.
Oh, he's fine. Just feeling no pain, n'est-ce pas? Impressionable. Just the way we like them. Isn't that right, boys?
The group of seated officers chimed in with a dull chorus of cheers. Devinter raised an eyebrow and smiled.
Perfect. And I believe I know exactly who really needs a visit from our detective here. Kidnapping is a terribly serious offense, if I'm not much mistaken.
Lamalle's eyes narrowed with a look of evil delight.
That's weird. It used to be around here somewhere. Everything's changed so much.
Mrs. Flack had been driving around and around the same block looking for one of her favorite diners that she swore was there, yet was having some difficulty locating. The wharf was crowded for a Wednesday, and navigating the tourist-packed streets in a tiny pink car was anything but inconspicuous. As they crept along in the traffic that ran down the crowded wharf front, they were inundated with a variety of whistles and whoops. It seemed that people couldn't help themselves but remark about how cute Pinky was. Some even stopped to take pictures.
Oh, don't worry. That always happens. You just get used to it after a while.
Yuki sank down in her seat as far as she possibly could. While they waited at a stoplight, Mrs. Flack finally gave up on finding the elusive restaurant. The stack of tourist brochures was sticking out of her purse which sat between them. Mrs. Flack flipped through them, selected one, and showed it to Yuki.
Hey, let's try something different. This might be fun. I haven't been out there in years. We always used to have such a great time.
Yuki glanced over the brochure that advertised a beachside amusement park. It was hard to tell if the brochure was really old or just designed to look retro. She smirked at the name.
Playland at the beach?
Mrs. Fleck decided that they would take the scenic route. This, unfortunately, meant that they had to weather the bumper-to-bumper traffic along the touristy waterfront. Pinky slowly limped along Jefferson Street while Yuki took in the sights. Crowds of people lined the street, which was clogged with a number of stores selling basically the same stuff that she had seen in Chinatown. Except here, the storefronts were crowded with row after row of oversized t-shirts.
I went to SF and all I got was crabs?
Eventually, Mrs. Flack's patience wore thin at their lack of progress. She made an abrupt left turn and Pinky squealed around the corner as they escaped the traffic jam. Mrs. Flack seemed to tune into some current that delivered them quickly through a number of side streets. Traffic lights seemed to magically turn to green as they approached. Yuki was reminded of Crowley and his talent for shortcuts. She guessed it must just be a local thing. Pinky finally emerged from a few blocks of apartment houses to a sight that made Yuki gasp. Perched next to a picturesque lagoon was an enormous domed structure that glowed salmon pink in the bright sunlight. While Mrs. Flack pointed out the Palace of Fine Arts, Yuki repeated the words in her head, remembering the photo from the tower room, the picture of her grandmother and her Winter from 1915. She neglected to mention any of this to Mrs. Flack. Yuki's tour of the city progressed. They stopped at Fort Point, which jutted out and bordered the Pacific underneath the Golden Gate Bridge. They drove through the sunlit woods of the Presidio and stopped at the Legion of Honor to take in the view of the northwestern corner of the city. Mrs. Flack employed a few more abrupt turns down a variety of side streets until they were on Point Lobos Avenue, heading towards Ocean Beach. After several blocks of densely parked apartment houses, suddenly they were surrounded by trees as the avenue dipped and turned abruptly, revealing a jagged coastline. Mrs. Flack smiled and pointed out the Cliff House, a restaurant she remembered from her youth. While she was commenting on how much it had changed, Yuki felt the slightest twist of nausea in the pit of her stomach. At first, she thought it was just the twists and turns of the road, but then she realized it was something else. Her vision began to blur. The music on the radio suddenly sounded distorted. Yuki clutched at the tiny armrest, trying to steady herself while she rubbed her eyes and blinked. To her amazement, she realized that she was able to see Mrs. Flack in the interior of the car as clear as day. It was only the view outside of Pinky that had changed. The car rounded a bend in the road, revealing a grand overview of the long, narrow strip of Ocean Beach below. Everything outside the car seemed to swirl in a sort of heat haze, making it difficult to focus clearly. The great highway cut a line between the beach and a cluster of buildings. A snaking wooden roller coaster gave away that this must be their destination. They'd arrived at Playland at the beach. As they approached, Yuki was able to make out a building topped with a painted clown's head. A sign printed in quirky circus letters read, "Funhouse." They began to pass by rows of parked cars. In the strange haze, Yuki thought that the cars seemed really old-fashioned, like they had suddenly driven onto a movie set. Also, the people who were walking along the promenade seemed awfully dressed up. The men in hats and suit jackets and the ladies all in skirts. Yuki looked over at Mrs. Flack's crazy outfit, which suddenly didn't seem so out of place. And then she noticed that Mrs. Flack was frowning.
"Well, it used to be here."
Her words seemed to bring Yuki's vision back into focus. Outside, the row of parked cars had suddenly vanished, becoming a low concrete embankment. The roller coaster and funhouse were gone as well, replaced by a block of ugly condominiums. While Yuki adjusted her eyes, which were surely playing tricks on her, Mrs. Flack composed herself and turned Pinky off the road. They rolled into a parking lot next to the beach, which, thankfully, still seemed pretty real.
"Well, maybe we should just take a walk on the beach. How does that sound?"
Mrs. Flack put the car in park and switched off the ignition. She collected Yuki's backpack and stowed it safely in Pinky's trunk. Her handbag over her arm, Mrs. Flack led the way towards the sound of the crashing waves. Perhaps a little bit earlier, it would have been a perfect day at the beach. The sun was already low in the sky. A cold breeze was cutting in from the Pacific. Mrs. Flack kicked off her shoes and walked out onto the hard-packed sand at the surf's edge. She took broad steps, splashing in the advancing and retreating tide. Clearly, she was not missing her job, or Derventer.
"Oh, it's so nice not to be at his beck and call."
Yuki was fumbling with her shoes, as well as the bits of hair that had escaped from their clips and had migrated into her mouth. Eventually, she managed to catch up to Mrs. Flack.
"Yep, I'll bet. How could you work for someone like that?"
"Well, I didn't start out working for him. I was there to look after your grandmother, and he sort of came with a package. Your grandmother was very fond of him. She liked having him around. When she finally passed, I was already helping him with a lot of things, so I just sort of stayed on."
Yuki thought that still didn't exactly address her point.
"But what about what he's been doing?
Mrs. Flack looked at Yuki like the last thing she wanted to talk about was Derventor.
What? What has he been doing?
The kids! The kids that he sneaks into the Belfair with Philgrave?
Kids? What do you mean? It is beauty treatments on ladies of a certain age, that's all. But Philgrave? He's always given me the creeps, especially lately.
So, let me get this straight. Just so we're clear, you weren't working with Derventor when he was hurting those kids? You were just dusting and answering the phones?
No, I never really knew what he was up to. He always shooed me away from his studio. I know he's not the best boss, but I don't think he'd hurt anyone. I was there to take care of your poor old grandmother. And let me tell you, towards the end, that was plenty.
Somehow, Yuki still wasn't buying Mrs. Flack's story.
So, then you know about the tea pool and the monster in the basement?
Mrs. Flack lowered her sunglasses, looking genuinely confused.
The monster? Yuki, what are you talking about?
The thing down in that room that belonged to my grandmother. I know because I've seen it. I've seen it swimming down there in its tea pool. I suppose you've never heard of that either?
Oh no, I remember all about the tea pool. But your grandmother stopped using that years ago. I thought it had been boarded up and forgotten. Oh, it must be filthy down there. It hasn't been cleaned in ages.
Wait, didn't you get suspicious when Derventor suddenly had you shopping for tea and Mr. Halliday started fixing up the tea maker?
I thought it was my idea about the tea trolley. I guess I just thought he was paying tribute to your grandmother when he wanted to use the tea maker.
A sly look spread across Yuki's face.
What he was doing was filling up the tea pool.
What? The tea pool? You mean they're connected?
Of course they're connected! That was Derventor's plan, to fix the tea maker and fill the tea pool so the monster would come back. The monster whose skin makes you younger.
The breeze suddenly seemed to pick up and blow down the beach, causing Yuki to shiver.
I saw it. It was like I was her. She called it her baby. And then all those people she had down there with her.
Yuki's eyes burned in the waning light as she turned to Mrs. Flack.
Are you one of those? One of those Ouroboros people? I saw your flask the other day. They all had them, just like yours.
With a reluctant smile, Mrs. Flack opened her purse and produced a round silver flask.
Why, yes, dear. I have a flask. Your grandmother offered it to me a year or so after I arrived.
Yuki narrowed her eyes.
So you are one of them. Exactly how old are you, Mrs. Flack?
Mrs. Flack chuckled, very ladylike.
Oh, Yuki, you never ask a lady her age.
Mrs. Flack unscrewed the flask's tiny stopper. She tipped the flask over, and only a few amber drops escaped onto the sand.
I suppose it doesn't really matter. You know, I'm tired of standing still. These days I seem to forget more than I remember. And you know, it really hasn't been that long for me. Your grandmother, however, I don't know how she managed it. All those years unchanged, standing still.
Mrs. Flack emerged from her reverie and realized that the sun had set. Suddenly, the breeze that had been blowing changed to a chill wind. She looked back to Yuki and met her thoughtful gaze with a small smile. Then the moment passed. The day at the beach was over. Mrs. Flack suddenly snapped back to her old self, noting how windblown and sandy they were. They rushed back along the sand to where Pinky was parked. Mrs. Flack rummaged through the trunk until she emerged with a fluffy towel for Yuki. She gave their clothes and shoes a thorough shaking out, trying to keep as much sand as possible out of Pinky. Then, perhaps realizing this was a futile prospect, Mrs. Flack stuffed her possessions into Yuki's backpack and loaded everything into the trunk.
Oh, what the hell? I'll just clean it up later.
Mrs. Flack unsnapped the cover for Pinky's soft top, and Yuki helped secure it into place. Mrs. Flack got behind the wheel with a concerned look.
You know, you'd better come back to my place. I think it'd be better for you to stay with me until we get a hold of your mother. I'll make us a nice dinner, and we can watch an old movie. Do you like Humphrey Bogart? Have you ever seen Dark Passage or The Maltese Falcon?
Yuki shook her head, clearly mystified as to who this Humphrey Bogart character was. She didn't mind old movies, though, and the thought of a home-cooked meal didn't sound too bad. Yeah, Mrs. Flack may be a little odd, but then again, not any stranger than Yuki herself. Plus, the idea of alternate accommodations, at least until they talked to the doctor, sounded like a really good idea. Yeah, maybe Mrs. Flack wasn't so bad after all. As they set out on the road back to Flack's house, which luckily wasn't too far since Mrs. Flack lived in the outer Richmond, Yuki switched on Pinky's radio, and another golden oldie filled the interior of the car as they turned onto Fulton Street. After a few blocks of silence, Mrs. Flack spoke up.
You know, what you said earlier made me remember something.
Yuki looked over thoughtfully as Mrs. Flack continued.
Years ago, before your grandmother became really ill, sometimes she would think I was your mother. She would call me Ame all the time. She used to forget things, and it made her upset. I remember her shouting at me, "Where's the baby? Where's the baby?" But I never quite knew what she meant by that.
And where was the doctor? I mean, my mom, then?
Goodness, she must have been in medical school by then. I really didn't meet her until she moved back to the city with your father, before you were born.
You knew my father?
Well, yes. Just for a short time. Before his accident.
Mrs. Flack told Yuki a little bit about Patrick O'Malley. About how it had been Yuki's father, the other doctor, who had tried to mend fences between Yuki's mother and Iwanaga, who hadn't spoken in years. Mrs. Flack had no idea what had caused the rift between the two. As she continued, she had nothing but kind words to say about Yuki's father. He was one of those types who only saw the best in people. And when the O'Malleys discovered they were pregnant, Patrick was sure it would be the thing that would bring the family back together, but apparently it didn't quite work out as planned. Mrs. Flack trailed off as they approached 24th Avenue. The street was crowded with little boxy houses that all looked a little similar. About halfway down the block, they arrived at Mrs. Flack's house. It was the picture of quaint 50s perfection. As they turned into the driveway, Yuki noticed an enormous gold Cadillac double parked a little ways down the street. She thought she remembered it, but couldn't fathom why she happened to be seeing it parked on Mrs. Flack's street. As soon as Mrs. Flack shut off the car, there was a sudden flashing of blue and red light that lit up the night sky. A powerful beam of white light from behind them suddenly illuminated the interior of the car. Yuki looked over her shoulder, squinting at the sight of the two squad cars parked on the street behind them. Then she saw the door of the gold Cadillac open and recognized the man that exited the car. She breathed a sigh of relief. It was Crowley's dad, Mr. Golden, walking towards them and carrying a bullhorn.
Remain in your vehicle. Put your hands on the dashboard where the officer can see them.
What is this?
Mrs. Flack's head spun around in a state of confusion as her door was flung open. She was pulled out of her seat and forced up against the side of the car. Yuki heard the distinct sound of handcuffs clicking shut. The officer informed them that Mrs. Flack was charged with kidnapping and then led her away reciting her Miranda rights. Mrs. Flack was incredulous.
Kidnapping?
Then Yuki's door opened, and another officer pulled her gruffly out of the car. He grabbed her arm and pulled her away towards the other squad car. Despite Yuki's protests, the officer merely stared at her. Yuki stopped struggling when she saw the officer's eyes. They seemed like they were lit from within by a strange golden fire. All the while, Mrs. Flack's complaints seemed to fall on deaf ears.
What are you doing with her? Yuki... Don't worry. This is a mistake.
Yuki tried to wrestle free from the officer's grip and called out.
She didn't kidnap me. What did she do? I don't understand.
Yuki was escorted to the back of the other squad car and locked inside. She looked out the window and saw the approaching figure of Crowley's father. She noticed that behind his smudged glasses, his eyes had the same odd luster, flickering like they were lit with tiny golden flames. He got into the front seat and spoke to Yuki through the protective plexiglass shield.
Miss O'Malley, I'm Detective Golden. We're going to make sure you get back home safe, okay?
I think you're making a mistake, Detective.
Oh, there's no mistake about it. Meredy Flack is a very dangerous woman. She needs to be taken into custody. Now then, I'll have one of these officers drive you back home.
Yuki gestured over towards Pinky.
My backpack is still in the trunk. All my stuff is in it.
Detective Golden looked over at Mrs. Flack's Metropolitan and snickered. He jogged across the street, took the key out of the car's ignition, and then opened the trunk. He shifted through the trunk's contents until he produced Yuki's backpack. As he walked back towards the squad car, he was joined by one of the officers. Yuki noticed Mrs. Flack's purse strap sticking out of the backpack's partially zippered flap. The officer got behind the wheel and started up the car while Detective Golden opened Yuki's door and handed her the backpack. His eyes were still shining with that strange, faintly glowing light.
Okay now. You get home safe. We'll be in touch if we need you.
He closed Yuki's door and the squad car began to drive away. Yuki tried to wave at Mrs. Flack as they cruised past the other squad car, but Mrs. Flack was too busy arguing with the remaining officers to notice. Yuki felt a pang of sympathy for Mrs. Flack, who, despite all her quirks and compulsive cleanliness, really wasn't a bad person. And she certainly didn't deserve anything like this. Yuki sat in the back of the police car, coasting through the avenues on their way back to the Curse Castle. She quietly unzipped her backpack and extracted Mrs. Flack's purse. She looked up and saw that the officer was just driving and not paying any attention to her. She snapped open the purse and inspected its contents. There was really nothing exceptional. Some lipstick, a roll of mints, a pair of reading glasses, and then a stack of old driver's licenses held together with a rubber band. Yuki flipped through them, noting how Mrs. Flack looked the same in every picture. Then she gaped when she saw that some of the licenses at the bottom of the stack had no pictures at all. They were written in ink and dated from as far back as 1952. Sunk at the bottom of the purse was Mrs. Flack's silver flask. Yuki picked it up and rubbed her finger over the symbol of the circular snake. And then, something shining at the very bottom of the purse caught her eye. It was Crowley's amethyst crystal. Suddenly, her brief conversation with him earlier that day came back to her.
Crowley, he's the one who did this. He called his dad, and now look what happened. It's his stupid fault Mrs. Flack got arrested.
Yuki sat fuming, currently having a difficult time deciding who she was angrier at, Crowley or his father. The officer finally looked up into his rearview mirror.
Hey, you okay back there? Don't worry, I'll get you home safe and sound. Hey, you got everything you need?
Yuki's eyes fell to the amethyst crystal she held in her hand.
Yeah, I've got everything I need.
And so, Chapter 10 comes to a close. I'd like to thank guest voices on this episode, Jennifer Viale as Mrs. Flack, and Leanne Parker as Yuki. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and at comptech.com. For more info, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 11. And until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.